Welcome back to the Kurdish Research Audio Archive. You shared some truly fascinating material with us, quite a collection of articles and research notes, all focused on the Kurdish epic of Dimdim Castle. This narrative, it's incredibly significant in Kurdish culture, isn't it? Often put right up there with Memuzin.
That's right. And our goal today really is to take this stack of sources you've pulled together and, well, explore them. We want to get at not just the story of Dimdim itself, but also the history behind it. You know, the characters, the themes, and figure out why this ancient story still echoes so powerfully today. We'll try to unpack the key insights from the different perspectives in the material.
Okay, let's start at the beginning then. To really get the epic, we need the historical context first. What was going on back then, early 17th century, when the Battle of Dimdim happened?
Well, it was a really turbulent period in the Middle East. You had this intense rivalry between the two big powers, the Ottoman and Safavid empires. And Kurdish territories were right in the middle, often contested borderlands, basically.
Right. And the Safavid Empire, under Shahbaz III, was really pushing to centralize his power at this time.
Absolutely. Shah Abbas, he reigned from, 1587 to 1629, was very focused on consolidating control, expanding Safavid influence, and just strengthening the state overall. You know, the way Kurdistan was eventually divided, a lot of that was shaped by these ongoing imperial struggles for dominance in the region.
And right in the middle of this strategic area, you have this Kurdish leader, Emirzan Lipsarin.
Yes, him. Also known as Amir Khan Lipsarin. He was the ruler of the Baradost region, which is in present-day northwestern Iran. And in 1609, he made a move that really, upped the stakes. He started rebuilding the fortress of Dimdim near Lake Urmia.
And the sources are clear. This wasn't just, fixing up an old fort. This was seen as a statement.
Exactly. For both sides, Kurds and Safavids, this rebuilding was seen as a pretty bold assertion of Kurdish autonomy, a direct challenge, really, to Safavid authority in a critical zone.
And there's this detail in the sources that adds such a layer of tragic irony. His name, Golden Hand Khan. Where did that actually come from?
Yeah, that title. It was actually given to him by Shah Abbas himself. The sources say the Shah let Emirzan fashion an artificial hand made of red gold because he'd lost his own hand showing bravery in a previous war, fighting alongside the Safavids, no less.
Wow. So the very man the Shah honored is the one who later leads this defiance at Dimdim.
Precisely. Which must have made the Safavid reaction even harsher.
Swift and severe, the sources say.
Definitely. A large imperial army, led by the Grand Vizier Hatem Beg Ordubadi, was sent out pretty quickly. The siege of Dimdim Castle started in November 1609.
And it wasn't quick. It went on for quite a while.
No, it lasted right through to the summer of 1610. And despite being, heavily outnumbered and facing superior Safavid firepower, the Kurdish defenders put up this incredibly fierce, tenacious resistance.
But in the end, the fortress did fall. And the aftermath, as documented by the Safavid historians themselves, was just brutal.
It really was. Shah Abbas ordered a general massacre of the surviving defenders. And the punishment wasn't just at the castle. It spread to the wider populations in the Baradost and Makrian regions, anyone who had supported the resistance. The Safavid court historian, Eskandar Beg Turkoman, he recorded these harsh measures.
And the sources also point out that Shah Abbas didn't stop there. He put in place these long-term strategies, too.
Exactly. He was trying to permanently change the political and demographic landscape. Things like forcibly resettling the Turkish Afshar tribe into those areas around Dimdim that had been depopulated, and deporting Kurdish tribes far away to Khorasan. These were calculated moves designed to break local power bases and suppress any future challenges.
So right here, one of the key takeaways from the material is this fundamental clash in perspective. From the Safavid side, documented by their own historians, this was clearly seen as Kurdish mutiny or treason against legitimate rule.
Mm-hmm. Whereas for the Kurds, as the epic powerfully shows, it's framed completely differently, as a righteous fight for freedom, for self-preservation. And this divergence is absolutely central to understanding the epic's role. It acts as a counter-narrative, actively resisting that dominant external interpretation.
Okay, that really sets the historical scene. Now, how does this historical event get transformed into the epic narrative, into Beiti Dimdim? What's the core story we find in the epic itself?
Well, the core narrative focuses on Emirzan Lepsarin's valiant, but ultimately tragic, effort to achieve Kurdish independence. It centers on him rebuilding Dimdim as the symbol of sovereignty, which then provokes the huge Safavid siege. It details the heroic defense against impossible odds, and then culminates in the castle's fall, which is often depicted with the defenders choosing death over surrender.
And the epic really brings certain characters into sharp focus.
Emir Zan, naturally, is the central hero, the visionary leader dreaming of a strong Kurdish state with Dimdim as its capital. That golden hand becomes symbolic, you know, of his complex past and his fate. And then Shah Abbas is the powerful antagonist, representing that oppressive imperial force trying to crush autonomy.
It's really striking that the epic includes women so actively, not just as background figures.
Very much so. Khatun Kham is named in some versions as a leader, a hero taking part in the battle. Mm. And the collective portrayal of the women, the newlywed girls, choosing to leap from the castle walls rather than be captured. It's incredibly powerful. Some sources even mention their happy screams as they jump a chilling detail that reframes despair as a final act of defiance, of choosing honor.
And the defenders as a whole are portrayed with immense loyalty, immense courage.
Yes, absolutely. Their endurance, their sacrifice, that really defines the spirit of the defense in the epic. And a critical plot point that turns up in many versions is the Safavids discovering and cutting off the castle's secret water supply, the underground source. That move is often shown as the turning point, the thing that ultimately seals the fate of the defense.
So the epic lives on both in oral traditions, the Beatty Dimdim, and also in written forms.
Exactly. It was carried for centuries by the Dengvezhes, the Kurdish storytellers and singers. That oral tradition is key, but we also have early written accounts, like the poetic version by Fakih Tayran, who lived relatively close to that time. And then much more recently, you have modern adaptations, like Yasin Aziz's novel, Dum Dum Castle, or the poem Kayla Dimdime by Jan Dost.
And the work done by scholars in actually collecting and analyzing all these different versions seems absolutely vital.
Oh, monumental, really. People like Ordiksane Salil and his siblings, they dedicated their lives to documenting Kurdish folklore, and Dimdim was absolutely central to their research. Their careful, meticulous work is so important for preserving this oral literature and, frankly, affirming its historical and cultural weight against narratives that might try to diminish it. The mention of Ereb Shamo translating an original story also hints at these complex paths of transmission over time.
Yeah, looking at that table too and the material you shared, it just lays bare that clash of narratives.
It really does. Kurdish versions consistently frame it as this fight for freedom, a noble struggle of heroes and martyrs, while the Persian chronicles just call it mutiny, treason, which from their perspective justified the brutal crackdown. It really underscores how the epic isn't just telling a story, it's actively shaping collective memory, building identity, pushing back against external pressures.
Oh, Hannah the Chai Lady is here. Rojbash Hannah.
Ah, perfect timing. Just what we needed.
Wow, that smells amazing today. Let's give this a try.
Yes. This has a lovely balance today. Not too bitter at all. Just the right amount of sugar, I think. Very warming.
Definitely good chai today. Much needed after digging into that intense history. All right, feeling refreshed. Let's delve into the deeper meanings now. Beyond the plot itself, what are the central themes that make this epic resonate so powerfully, even today?
Well, themes like heroism, sacrifice, and martyrdom are absolutely core. Emir Zan and the defenders, they're elevated. They become heroes whose choice, death over submission, transforms them into martyrs for Kurdish freedom, for dignity. This really taps into those classic heroic archetypes where sacrifice leads to a kind of immortality and memory.
And the ideas of loyalty and betrayal seem really complex here.
They are, definitely. Loyalty to the Kurdish cause, loyalty to Emir Zan, that's paramount for the defenders in the epic. But the tension comes from that clash with the Safavid view of Emir Zan's actions as treason, and that contrast with the Kurdish perspective, which sees his loyalty as being to his own people, a higher calling, perhaps. His past service to the Shah, marked by that golden hand, just adds another poignant layer to this whole conflict of loyalties.
But the theme that feels maybe the most dominant, running through everything, is resistance, that quest for liberation.
Absolutely. I think the epic serves as this incredibly powerful vehicle for articulating the historical experience of injustice, of being marginalized. It inspires values of self-determination, of defiance. Rebuilding Dimdim itself is shown as this assertion of the right to exist freely, and the defense becomes the symbol of refusing to be subjugated by overwhelming imperial power.
And this theme is still so relevant. You mentioned the sources, quote, a Kurdish fighter in Sur saying, let Sur be the fortress Dimdim. That's recent history.
That connection is incredibly striking, isn't it? It shows how this battle from the 17th century remains this living metaphor. It's a source of inspiration, a touchstone for modern struggles, for autonomy, for defense against, again, overwhelming odds.
We talked about the historical role of women, but their portrayal within the epic itself as literary figures That's important too.
Yes, Khatuncom is specifically named as a leader in some accounts. And that collective sacrifice of the women and girls leaping from the walls, it's portrayed as a conscious choice, an active decision to preserve honor. They aren't just passive victims in the story. They are agents. Even in tragedy, it gives them a really significant, impactful role in the narrative.
How was this epic traditionally performed? What did that sound like, feel like?
It's known as a lodge or a bayat, and it was performed by the Dengbeyes, those traditional Kurdish storytellers and singers. Often they'd be accompanied by instruments like the timbur.
Ordiksana Salil's work offers such vivid descriptions of the performance style.
It does. He documented how Dengbeyes used, you know, expansive gestures, hand movements, really expressive vocal techniques to bring the story alive. Some performers would even incorporate sounds, like using iron cymbals during the battle scenes, to make it a truly immersive experience for the audience. The performance itself was absolutely crucial to the epic's power and impact over the centuries.
So where does Dimdim fit within the broader landscape of Kurdish epic literature?
It's definitely regarded as a major Kurdish national epic, second perhaps only in fame to Memuzin. Now, while some might compare it to the Persian Shahnameh, scholars like Behruz Çamanura make a strong case for a distinct, independent Kurdish epic tradition, particularly in the Gorani dialect, he argues, with its own heroes, its own narratives, and even its own characteristic syllabic meter that sets it apart from classical Persian forms.
So it's not just borrowing from Persian models. It has its own roots, its own lineage.
Exactly. And one really striking aspect, which the sources highlight, is how the Dimdim epic focuses so strongly on the collective resistance. It's about the fate of the Kurdish people, or the tribe as a whole, rather than centering almost exclusively on the prowess of a single individual hero, like you might see in, say, the Iliad or Beowulf. This emphasis on the shared struggle makes it an incredibly potent tool for building and reinforcing collective identity and historical consciousness.
Okay, so we've looked at the history, the story itself, the themes, how it was performed. Let's bring it right up to the present.
Why is this story still such a living force today? What's its cultural and political legacy?
Dimdim is absolutely foundational to modern Kurdish national consciousness. It really is. It's become this potent symbol of resistance, of national honor, of the fight to protect the homeland, Kurdistan. Particularly in eastern Kurdistan, Rojhelat, where the castle is actually located, it's seen as a kind of hallowed place, something that nurtures the spirit of freedom and self-determination.
And how does this influence modern Kurdish culture and politics more concretely? Well, Emirzan is celebrated widely as a paramount national hero. Artists, poets, singers, they continually keep his memory and the story alive. You see contemporary art directly inspired by it, like the painter Zilemo's work on Dimdim. His stated aim is to breathe new life into Kurdish history and actively counter historical distortions. It's frequently cited as this deep wellspring of national identity and pride fueling cultural movements.
And we see its political relevance bleeding into contemporary conflicts, too.
Yes, absolutely. That invocation we mentioned, "Let Sur be the fortress Dimdim," shows its direct application as a powerful metaphor in modern urban resistance. Political organizations have also consciously drawn on the spirit, the patterns of epics like Dimdim, to foster a sense of historical continuity and to disseminate their own ideology within resistance movements.
How is this memory actively kept alive across generations? Is it just through art and politics?
It's also through enduring commemorations. The sources mention that Kurdish communities reportedly hold annual events specifically to honor Emirzan and the sacrifices made at Dimdim. It remains revered as this enduring symbol of defiance against tyranny, whatever form that tyranny might take.
The sources also really emphasize its adaptability.
That's so key to its enduring power, I think. The symbolism of Dimdim is potent enough that it can be invoked across so many different contexts, folklore, art, warfare, political discourse. The core themes, resistance, honor, sacrifice, they have this timeless quality that allows the story to resonate with new generations and adapt to the specific challenges they face. The symbol evolves, but its core meaning remains powerful.
And this is obviously vital for maintaining a distinct Kurdish identity, especially when facing external pressures or attempts at assimilation.
Crucial. Absolutely crucial. The continued celebration and retelling of the Kurdish version of the Dimdim story serves as a powerful counter-narrative. It stands firmly against attempts by dominant states, historically the Safavids, but implicitly others later on, to erase or delegitimize or frame Kurdish history and aspirations purely in negative terms like mutiny or treason. It actively preserves the narrative of a legitimate struggle for freedom. Zilamo's quote about rekindling hidden history against those who have stolen, distorted, or obscured, that captures this function perfectly.
So finally, let's talk about how this story actually survived. How is it preserved and studied over all these centuries?
Well, it's quite a journey. It starts, of course, with that vibrant oral tradition carried down by the Dengbejes for generations. And we have those early written accounts, too, like Faki Tyran's poem, close to the event itself.
Then Western scholars started to pay attention.
Yes, that began, notably, in the mid-19th century. August Jaba, who was Russian consul in the Ottoman Empire, he transcribed several versions. He even produced a French translation. That really brought it to international academic notice. Albert Sosin also published versions later on.
But the role of Kurdish scholars themselves seems absolutely essential in this preservation effort.
Oh, without question. Figures like Orduskane Salil and his siblings, Salile Salil and Smil Salil, they were pioneers. They dedicated their careers to collecting, documenting, and analyzing Kurdish folklore. And Dimdim was a major focus for Orduskane. It was the subject of his doctoral thesis. Their rigorous academic work was vital, not just for safeguarding the material, but also for challenging academic perspectives that sometimes overlooked or minimized Kurdish historical agency and cultural distinctiveness.
Ereb Shamo is also mentioned in the sources in relation to transmitting the story.
Yes, Yasin Aziz credits him with translating a version, maybe an original story, into Kurdish decades ago. And Shamo himself apparently witnessed incredibly moving oral recitations of the epic. It hints at these complex, possibly even cross-cultural pathways the story traveled. We even hear about Armenian bards in Kurdistan performing the epic, documented by I.A. Orbeli.
And modern work continues this legacy of preservation and interpretation.
Absolutely. Yasin Aziz's novel, bringing it to an English-speaking audience, is significant. Yandost's poem embeds it within modern Kurdish literature. And broader scholarly work, like Beriz Chemanara's research on the Kurdish Shahnameh tradition, helps to situate Dimdim properly within its own distinct literary lineage, arguing against seeing it as merely derived from Persian models.
So, pulling all of this together, we've looked at the hard history, the epic narrative that grew from it, its powerful themes, the performance style, its enduring legacy, and how it's been kept alive and studied. What's the kind of overarching understanding we can take away from these sources?
You know, perhaps the most striking thing when you look at it all is how this epic manages to transform what was, historically, a devastating military defeat and a brutal massacre into a profound moral and cultural victory.
That seems paradoxical, doesn't it?
I mean,
historically, the castle fell, the defenders were wiped out. It was a catastrophe in physical terms.
It absolutely was, a catastrophic loss. But the epic tradition, it shifts the focus, doesn't it? It doesn't deny the loss, the suffering, but it places the emphasis squarely on the extraordinary heroism, the unwavering refusal to surrender, the preservation of honor even through immense sacrifice. The narrative highlights a completely different kind of triumph.
So the story emphasizes a sort of spiritual or maybe moral victory that transcends the physical destruction.
Exactly. And this kind of reframing is incredibly powerful, especially in epics that emerge from resistance movements or oppressed communities. The moral victory, upholding core values like freedom, dignity, defiance in the face of impossible odds, often comes to outweigh the physical outcome and the narrative's lasting impact and its legacy for future generations.
So the legacy isn't one of victimhood, but rather one of defiant strength, of an unbroken spirit.
Precisely. It fully acknowledges the suffering and the loss, but ultimately it celebrates a spirit that couldn't be extinguished by physical destruction. It provides this narrative of profound resilience. You could say the echoes from those castle walls, silenced back in 1610, they still speak volumes today through this enduring epic tradition.
The Kurdish epic of Dimdim Castle, Behi Dimdim. It really is a vital cultural monument.
It stands as this living testament, doesn't it? To Kurdish resilience, to their deep connection to their homeland, and to that enduring quest for self-determination, for preserving their identity against truly formidable historical odds.
So as you, our listener, reflect on this story, maybe consider how narratives like Dimdim, even those born from moments of profound historical loss, can become such powerful tools. Mm-hmm. Tools for preserving identity, for fueling resistance across centuries. How do communities find ways to transform these moments of tragedy into enduring symbols of strength? And maybe think about what stories in your own experience or in the history, function in a similar way.